Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Tim Grady, and I'm here with the founder of Manufacturing Talk Radio, Lou Weiss. Lou, good to see you again today.
Thank you much. You as well.
We're going to talk today about AI-driven process, the revolution in manufacturing. This is all the noise you hear about, you know, automation in manufacturing, and everybody's freaking out about AI. The reality is that AI has been around for really quite a while. We've been automating manufacturing for a long time. So we reached out to an expert in the field, Michael Lynch. He is the founder and CEO of Praxi. He has a background in AI. He used to be with the Internet of Things with a small company. Can we mention their name, Michael?
Little tiny company. Yeah, sure. It's yellow, right?
So we want to have him give us an education on his experience with AI, and he's learned quite a bit from SAP and his previous experiences, including being in Les Miserables. So I don't know how much AI was there, Michael, but welcome to the show.
There was a little bit of eye, or you know, maybe talent, intelligence, if you will. But thank you. Nice to see you guys.
Good to have you on. So give us an idea of Praxi. Where did that come from and what do they do?
Yeah, I feel like I should address the Les Miserables thing just 30 seconds. Unless you guys want to talk about that. Anyway, in my youth, I used to sing and dance on Broadway, and then I got involved in 3D and making video games and then CAD and then manufacturing and all those kinds of things. So my last role before Praxi was at SAP and driving their Internet of Things division. And all the manufacturing companies I would go into had a tremendous group of software, a lot of SAP software, a lot of CRM, a lot of MES systems and quality systems, et cetera. But outside of that, there was a mountain of documents and Excel sheets and things that don't allow you to take advantage of AI. And so we created Praxi. What Praxi actually means in Greek is the practical application of knowledge. So it was a process-driven name. And the idea was, how do we make creating applications to get rid of all this Excel as easy as making PowerPoints so that manufacturers can really have a digitization platform to get all of their data digitized so you can take advantage of things like AI. And so that's where the name came from. And the idea is to just digitize away all the Excel sheets and documents and paper and whiteboards and huddle boards and get all of that stuff, your lean best practices, digitized so that you can execute in a digital realm.
So you blew my big question for this.
Oh, no.
So I was going to ask, what does practical application of knowledge mean? It means Praxi.
Well, you know, it's a really interesting point because there's a lot, especially in Six Sigma, and, you know, genius guys a lot smarter than I am have these methodologies, but they're oftentimes they can get theoretical, not that they all have to be, they're all amazing, but they can get theoretical. And what we wanted to do is create a way that people can actually practically implement things very rapidly. And so the practical application versus the theoretical application is really the idea behind the name.
Got it.
We've talked about AI and manufacturing with a few folks, Michael. And interestingly enough, one of the comments was from a guest, I'm concerned that AI isn't yet smart enough for manufacturing.
It's a really interesting point. Maybe take a second to address the history of AI in manufacturing. And I wouldn't call myself an AI expert, but I've been around it a lot in big companies who are trying to build it in. At SAP, we had this layer called the Leonardo kind of concept, which was to embed a traditional AI in the entire manufacturing suite. And the kinds of things, you know, we were trying to do is predictive maintenance and vibration analysis. And a lot of those, and that stuff's been around for quite a while, and we got pretty good at it. And the models there got pretty good. And so the idea was to replace, as you remember, this is probably 7 or 8 years ago when this was kind of the hot idea, was to be able to replace the part knowing when it was going to break. This is, you know, kind of along the line when smart things came into the vernacular, and the idea that the machine would tell you when it was going to break and you could fix it and those kinds of things. And a lot of those things had been addressed. So that's kind of the history. And then now, is AI smart enough for manufacturing? I think the reality is that we've now moved where all of these previous models have moved into what's called large language models. And your team, your guys can look those up, but they basically are using the same gradient descent concepts around language and applying them to everything. And it's just really worked out really well. But is that smart enough for manufacturing? It comes in two realms. If you reach out to the internet, is the specific AI information around your particular problem there? Maybe or maybe not, and there might be hallucination issues. But more and more, where I see things going is where the large language models actually get somewhat commoditized, and then you can index and work with your own data. And the intelligence around that data is going to tell you a lot of interesting things, what's worked in the past, what your documentation says is a good idea. So the intelligence will be more a combination of what's on the internet and the large language models sifting through that, as well as your own information on what's the best practice to solve particular problems, et cetera. So I think it is smart enough when it becomes a combination of both, and then you use different technologies to get the hallucinations out of it, and it becomes better over time. I mean, you know, it's iterating so quickly. I mean, there's new stuff every week on it.
So just to migrate off of, you know, how good it is and so on and so forth and where it's going, why is there groups of people that are afraid of it? I mean, we all know about HAL from Space Odyssey 2000, and, you know, he was a bad computer, he was a bad AI. Why are people afraid of this?
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, and you can listen to, I mean, some of the smartest people who are afraid of it are guys like Elon Musk, and there's others who are smart about it. But basically, it's inadvertent, really bad things that the objective, you know, the way that these things end up playing go better than human beings is you give it an objective and it will run and do its own training on millions of ways to win, and will win in ways that humans have never conceived. So if you give it the wrong objective, it might end up hurting us badly by turning off our power or something. If you give the objective to improve the environment, or, you know, you can think of any, you can think of all kinds of things that would be, you know, in concept, a good idea to try to have an AI help you with. But if done correctly, it might, I mean, the one that you hear the most about is, you know, we want to help the environment, and it decides that humans are the real problem with the environment. And, you know, okay, that was a, we don't want that. Or malicious actors training AIs to do bad things. Or you can think about battlefield drones that have no legal conscience. Like, you know, in our military, there's often lawyers who are involved in, can you take on a particular target, et cetera. If an AI robot dog with a machine gun on it gets set loose and doesn't have any of those constraints, what happens? You know, these are the reasons people are afraid. I think the other side of it is that I hear a lot is, how do I use it? But we can get to that if you want to drive down that road.
Well, Michael, I would like you to give us a couple of real world success stories about AI and manufacturing. If you have some that you can share with us without, you know, giving up somebody's secret sauce.
Well, what we've been trying to do, you know, again, back to the concept of practical, is bring in AI into the systems where people at the point of work can use a smarter buddy. So the idea is, and this gets to, you know, where can AI be useful? You know, we talked about vibration analysis, and you could, the other kinds of things is you can, and you see Microsoft and Google doing certain things like this. Here's an Excel sheet of data. Tell me about it. So the AI can go in and go, well, I see there are these kinds of trends and generate these kinds of charts. And that kind of stuff's very interesting from an analytics standpoint. And I think a lot of analytics companies will be providing solutions like that, from Microsoft to, you know, lots of the BI tools. Where what we tried to do was say, you know, if I'm in a manufacturing plant and I'm running a standard let's take A3 process. And for I assume your users or your listeners know all about this stuff, but an A3 process is a problem solving process. Or you might have a Gemba walk, which is a walk around. I think it literally means, I'm not an expert in this, but I think it means, you know, walk around or get out, and you go around the plant and you look for areas of lean optimization and waste reduction, and you capture those and you do these walk arounds, et cetera. So if you think about, if you had an intelligent buddy who could help you with that, what are the kinds of things that you would do? So what we've been implementing, and we're early in this, as I think everybody is, but what we've been implementing, and it's really quite stunning, the quality of support you get. But let's say you run an A3 and you're a food packaging company and you're having spoilage because you're having intermittent power outages. You normally would create an A3, and then you'd, part of the A3 is to analyze the problem, and you go through a number of steps to come up with answers that you might try. Well, when you put in the problem in our system, you hit a button, it goes out to the AI and says, what could be causing this? So instead of you having a brainstorming with a few of the people in the plant, it goes out on the internet and looks for every possible reason that these kinds of things could be happening, comes back with 5 options. And you select, wow, that one actually sounds like that might be the one. You select one of those and you can add some more information. You know, I also noticed X, Y, and Z was going on. You hit it again. It goes out and does an analysis of the root causes of that and options to fix it. And then you can select one of those and it'll go generate an action plan for you against that, using best practice procedures to go address that issue that was analyzed by the AI. So, and then you can add in your own expertise, and you know that is a very pragmatic praxy kind of solution to how you embed AI into a standardized problem and give somebody additional tools at the point of work. You can also do it if you're having an error at a particular machine that's giving you too much scrap. So instead of the operator just hitting, hey, push the maintenance button, the AI can suggest a number of things that the internet says might be interesting, but also things that in your own group of data sets have worked before. So that operator who may not even be an expert at that machine or how to maintain it gets a bunch of things they can do before they hit the maintenance button. So they're not sitting there for as long, you're getting better uptime, and you're not utilizing as many people in maintenance, which is always a problem in manufacturing. So those are some really simple, pragmatic ways that we've implemented it. And we're also like on the Gemba walks, you go around, you do your Gemba walks by categories of different types of lean waste you can remove, whether it be movement or whatever it is. You enter all that information. We summarize that data using a large language model. So it generates a summary that can be shared. That's your Gemba walk summary. Here's everything we did. You can then take those summaries, and from the summaries, it'll go generate a bunch of suggestions of ways to address all the issues that you saw. So that kind of a concept where you can integrate a smart summarizer, intelligent buddy into processes across your manufacturing plant is something that you've never had, and it's a force multiplier. One of the things you guys are familiar with is the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems that I see when we go into different plants is nobody ever says they have too much or too many extra employees. You know, they just got guys just standing around, it's great. Everybody has not enough people. Right. And so this is a force multiplier to get more productivity, to digitize your workers, to get younger workers where the tools are cutting edge. They're digitized, you know, they're cutting edge and they can use them. The last thing I would say about it, though, as well, is you can't use any of this AI stuff, in practical or not, if you're not digital. And so if you're running your huddle boards or your daily standups on paper and the old Toyota methodologies, which are great methodologies, but are all on whiteboards, you can't use AI. There's no AI to talk to that. It's not digital. So, you know, the first thing in going through that digitization journey is to get digital as quickly as possible. So then you can apply the technologies onto that.
Michael, I'm curious. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and I know that some of our listeners have heard it, maybe understand it, but not everyone, because it's fairly new, fascinating to me, called AI hallucinations. Can you explain it?
I don't think anybody can.
Can you explain what it is?
Yeah. So basically my understanding, and as I said, I'm not an AI expert. I've just been around it a lot, is that a hallucination happens when the AI doesn't have a good answer. So it tries to make up a plausible answer. And so it takes a plausible, you know, how does it understand what plausibility is? That's part of the large language model learning of how humans communicate and those kinds of things. And it will hallucinate. And there are certain techniques you can use called grounding, which is a bunch of various techniques that I'm not really that versed in, but you can ground it so it won't. This is multiple prompts. And, you know, what our technology does is manage the prompting mechanisms to go get, make sure the AI in a particular A3 or 5S or safety or whatever kind of process you're adding the AI into the workflow, all of our prompts do that work so that you try to minimize the hallucinations and try to make sure that you get the information that's as accurate as possible for the job you're trying to do. Because you'll see disclaimers on stuff on Bard or ChatGPT that say, you know, some of this data may not be accurate. It'll say that, you know, because it doesn't. And they're trying to get better at it and better at it. And but if you think about how humans do it as well, you know, you somebody asks you a question, you fill in the blanks. That's exactly what's going on.
Michael, when you walk into a plant and you're looking to solve a manufacturing issue, problem, what have you, and you go on this journey of a discussion, do you have a lot of people that look at you cross-eyed?
Well, no. And the reason is that the context of this conversation was something quite leading edge. It's AI related, how to use AI in manufacturing. That's not how we start most of our conversations. Most of our conversations are, you know, we're trying to do digital transformation and get lean change management going across the plant. And we've got, you know, these Excel sheets and we've got these processes and we've got these huddle boards. How can you help us? So we start with very basic things like helping companies digitize their huddle boards so that they move out, so they can get all the goodness you get of software. They can move out of paper, they roll up all their data, they can roll up across, you know, lines and plants, et cetera, digitizing, you know, lots of their different processes and giving them visibility that they never had before. So that's, you know, the cutting edge aspect of that is we can do it so fast. We can take, you know, normally you build software by what's the back end logic, what's the business logic, and then the user interface. And then you go through, and you know, you're talking, people are thrilled in traditional software if you can build something in 6 to 9 months. I mean, thrilled. And you guys have been involved in implementations of bigger software platforms. And, you know, they can take 18 months or 2 years. When we come in and we start developing things, we develop custom software. What our attempt was to try to build software as fast as you can build PowerPoint. And that's our goal. Now, we're not quite that fast, but we can build software in days. That's amazing.
Wow.
And so we build people's software in days. And then we say, by the way, would you like a buddy to come along in that A3 you're using? How does that work? And then we show them that, and whoa. So that's why we don't get cross-eyed, because we start slow and simple. And you know, what you said is, do people look at you cross-eyed? One of the most interesting and difficult parts of this is the human change management aspects. And so one of the ways we did deal with that is if people are using Excel sheets or documents they're used to, we digitize those, they look the same. But we've now got it all in the digital realm. And so you try to minimize the change management and move people along with you. You guys have both had businesses, and that moving people along is a really important part of it. So we do that with coaching, as well as trying to minimize the change impact, but maximize the business impact and the ROI on that, you know, trying to get paybacks in 3 months or less.
Amazing. Amazing.
I mean, I want to ask, but I know you'd have to give up your secret sauce, how you build software in days versus months.
We do it backwards. I'll give you kind of the high level. As I mentioned, like in traditional software development, you have to have a database schema that says, I'll give you some, for non-software people, imagine two Excel sheets. One is companies and one is employees. That's how a relational database works. So your employees would have the name of the employee, their location, their pay rates, all those kinds of things. Companies or customers would have those, and they're related by keys. That's how relational databases effectively work. So if I'm going to build a piece of software and I go, okay, I want to add locations and companies and let's say partners, I have to build a new table. Says this is my partner table and create a relationship. So when you're building software like that, it creates, you have to understand the entire structure before you build. and mapping all that structure out takes a lot of time. In our case, we start, and then you build up the business logic between all that data, and then you build a UI that allows you to do it. In our case, what we do is we just build the front ends, like you're building PowerPoints. And then we say, oh, you know what we want? We want to pull all the data from here. And you know how we want to do that? We want to then run these reports. And we, because you're starting with the end and not the beginning, you can go incredibly fast. And we built, this is all of our own secret sauce, we built all the infrastructure that makes that possible. And so instead of building in a way that's a traditional build, you build the opposite. You build from the front end user experience down, and then you structure all the data at the end. And that allows us to build this really quickly. It also allows us to put in things like AI into that structure really fast as well. So that's really the secret sauce. But we basically, the point is, we do it opposite. We have most of the people who build our applications are process people. They're not software engineers. And we have a few software engineers on the team. And it takes them a while to break their paradigm of how to build the apps, because they're like, how, what? So anyway, that's how we do it.
It's interesting because Lou and I have worked with the company that he built called All Metals and Forge Group for several decades. And it has a piece of software just as you described. It's a MySQL. It's got 1,500 tables. Mm-hmm. You have to know the relationship between this table to that table to the other table and that table in order to get this result.
And it means that, like, if you want to add a new field into the thing, you've got to go all the way down to the guts and figure out how to do it and make sure it doesn't break anything. And it's very brittle. And it's costly. And in our system, it just works because of the way it's structured. So it's very freeing because, we literally will build applications with customers there. And it's exciting for them too, because they're like, wow, we can do that. And you go, yeah. And then you add this, and it just sort of appears the structure. And then you can keep adding without having to go back to ground zero.
I have a favorite saying, Michael, when we've talked with our developers who created our software program. Can it do this? If it can do this, can it do that? And we just keep on going. And now,
the problem, though, Lou, is they work for you. The answer is always yes. It's just that they didn't. It's time. Like, oh yeah, we can do that. It's about nine weeks.
In the year 2004, we were quoted a price of $25,000. Oh, no problem. We can do this for $25,000. It's now way into the six figures.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah. Well, go ahead.
Question for you, Michael. Mm-hmm. Given the fact that this body of software exists when you go into manufacture, or in our case, we've got a MySQL database. Mm-hmm. One of the things that people struggle with is, okay, I've got all this data and I can do this query and I can get this report, but I don't get any visualization. It doesn't show me charts and graphs and pie charts and line charts, and to give me more of a visual experience of the data. Do you build that in?
Yeah, so we have, I would say, three or four critical components to that. So one is we can talk to all of those existing infrastructures. So we can talk to SQL databases, we can talk to MQTT feeds, we can talk, from PLCs, we can talk to other applications through a REST API. And we have out-of-the-box connectors to Excel and other things that you might want to integrate with our system. So talking to those other systems is really important to be able to surround it with all of the... Today, you think if you got your core applications and you surround it with Excel sheets and documents. We surround it with Praxy and make all of that stuff integrated. Then if you want to connect to, let's say, you've got an ERP system with a SQL database sitting under it, even a custom one, we have a SQL connector that we can connect to that, index that data, and then visualize all that in charts, et cetera. And we have various charting capabilities. I wouldn't say that we're a BI tool, though, as our core. What we really is a process management, which requires the ability to talk to all these things, the abilities to make forms and workflows and take them through stages and send out email notifications and approval processes and all those kinds of things. But the other thing that I found, which was really shocking to me, is you'll have a lot of command centers. I think the lean word from them is Obeya rooms. And they'll have a lot of BI in them that will be telling them things. And then when they say, okay, we got to go address it, somebody literally pulls a piece of paper and says, or sends an email to go get Phil to do that. So there's the visibility part, but there's also the management of the actions to address the issues found. And so we built into our system a task and project management capability that's just built in, so that as you're looking at, you know, your scrap levels are too high and then the red lights go off, you send a notification, then Phil goes, oh, I've got it. That task is now being tracked in the system. And when it's done, it's signed off. And so it's all integrated into a whole. So not just the visualization, but the project, the workflows, all of those things, because that's what's required to digitize the infrastructure.
My head is spinning because I'm thinking about this particular body of software that we have and how to make
it effective. I'll pitch you guys. You just call me and
we may have that conversation.
it might go to up another couple of figures. I don't mean with us. I just mean we'll add, but maybe we can get rid of some costs for you too.
Well, it's interesting because we've been running this since 2004. And every month we get bills for fixing this, addressing that, getting rid of the other, expanding it. It can do this, well, and make it do this, that, and the other. So every month we have expenses because we are under the belief that we are improving this on a monthly basis for the last 19 years.
Well, you know, the truth is you probably are. And you know, there are a couple of options to do digital transformation. The current method is, you know, you got your core software and then you try to knit them all together with, you know, APIs and then you use Excel. That's the default. That's probably most people. Then you have those companies that will do what you guys did, which is hire a custom shop to build something, or they'll take, you know, one of the top ERP companies and you know, hire them to effectively extend the platform to do everything they need. It's very expensive. It's very slow. The results can be great, though. But if, you know, it's really only generally the bigger companies or a company like yourselves that has a very focused type of solution you're building. And so what we're offering is, you know, we're trying to do it a tenth of the time and a tenth the cost. And to, because we can develop and deliver this stuff so quickly. Now, we're not in the business of trying to replace the core systems, but to digitize everything else. And so you don't have to have those custom shops and that slow, constant bleed and brittleness of the system that you have with custom development.
I think that we need to have a conversation off air.
I would love that. You guys invite me on your podcast and I close you. This is awesome.
Well, we want you to close more than just us. So if somebody wants to get a hold of Praxy, where do they go? What do they do, Michael?
You can come to our website and there's a request a demo and it'll go to one of our calendars and you'll get a demonstration. It might be from me, might be from some of our other team members. And we'd, you know, love to talk with you. And what we normally do, our process is we'll review the process that you have. And often people will send us Excel sheets and examples of their problems. And we'll actually digitize a light version of their solution to show them what it would feel like and give them access. And so they can really get a sense of it. And you know, they'll also validate that we build this stuff really quickly and powerfully.
So for those of you listening and watching, praxie.com is the way to get to Michael's website and have a conversation. This sounds like a great way to hit digital transformation running. I have to write a headline and an explanation for our YouTube video when I post it. And I want to say, do digital transformation slow and painful or hit the easy button?
Yeah, I think that's, we're effectively the easy button for it. And I think it's, maybe you can write our copy that I'm going to put that on the talk to our marketing people.
Oh, geez, that's wonderful. Listen, it was great having you on the show.
Absolutely, guys. And I love the jackets, love the show. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
And I love what you're doing. And like I said, maybe we need to be talking to you because we've been talking about doing a redo and it's a frightening thought.
Yeah. Just let me know when you guys want to talk. I'm happy to do it.
Yes. Frankly, a redo your way may be better than the redo we were thinking of. So we'll have a conversation and we encourage all of our listeners to have a conversation with Praxi. I think it's a quick and easy way to get to digital transformation with proof of concept early on. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Lou. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Michael. It's good talking to you. Thank you.
And for those of you who have been watching, please click the subscribe button and the like button and the share button. And let us know if you'd care to comment about the show. And we appreciate you listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio with Michael Lynch of Praxi.
That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the show, please like and subscribe, share on social media, or leave a review. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Rumble, or your favorite podcast app. Visit us online at mfgtalkradio.com for our other episodes. We have also included links to our advertisers below. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.